Om sahana vavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahavirdyan karavavahai tejasvinavadhi tamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Om. Okay, good. Welcome to the continuation of our weekly Bhagavad Gita class. We are coming now to the end of chapter 2. We'll begin our class, as always, with some chanting. Please glance at the translation and then repeat after me.
Nasti buddhira yuktasya, nasti buddhira yuktasya, na cha yuktasya bhavana, na cha yuktasya bhavana, na cha bhavayata shantir, na cha bhavayata shantir, ashantasya kutasukam, ashantasya kutasukam, indriyanam hi charatam, indriyanam hi charatam, yanmano nuvidhiyate, tarasya harati prajnam, tarasya harati prajnam, vayurnavamivambhasi, vayurnavamivambhasi, tasmad yasya mahabaho, tasmad yasya mahabaho, nigrahitani sarvashaha, nigrahitani sarvashaha, indriyan indriyartebhyas, indriyan indriyartebhyas, tasya prajna pratishtita, tasya prajna pratishtita, yanisha sarva bhutanam, yanisha sarva bhutanam, yasyam jagarti samyami, yathasyam jagarti samyami, yasyam jagrati bhutani, yasyam jagrati bhutani, sa nisha pasyato munehe, sa nisha pasyato munehe, apuryamanam achala pratishtam, apuryamanam achala pratishtam, samudramapa pravishanti yadvata, samudramapa pravishanti yadvata, tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve, tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve, sa shantim apnoti na kama kami, sa shantim apnoti na kama kami, vihaya kamanya sarvan, vihaya kamanya sarvan, pumans charati nisprahaha, pumans charati nisprahaha, nirmamo nirahankaraha, nirmamo nirahankaraha, sashantim adhigacchati, sashantim adhigacchati, esha brahmi stiti partha, esha brahmi stiti partha, nainam prapya vimuhyati, nainam prapya vimuhyati, stitva syamanta kalepi, stitva syamanta kalepi, brahma nirvanam ruchati, brahma nirvanam ruchati. And that's the last verse of the chapter. Vasanti, can you turn off the fan, I think? Thank you. And we'll get back and introduce our... I think we'll finish this chapter today. And just to set the context, if you remember at the
Chapter 2 was unique, having a number of different subject matters. Most chapters have one topic. Chapter 2 has several topics. And the last topic, which began with Arjuna's question back in verse 54, Arjuna asked, "What is the nature of the sthita prajna, one whose wisdom is firm? How does he walk and talk?" was Arjuna's somewhat misguided question. And then we've seen a rather elaborate description about the nature of an enlightened person, sthita prajna. And that description somewhat comes to an end here in verse 68, which was the last verse we saw in our prior class, where Sri Krishna concludes, "Tasmat, therefore, Mahabaho," we've seen this verse already, "O mighty armed Arjuna, yasya, one for whom," and go down to the third line, "indriyani, one for who, one whose indriyas," senses, and senses, remember, includes the mind. So not just sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch, including the mind. "One whose senses are nigrihitani, restrained, sarvashaha, completely restrained, indriyartebhyaha, restrained from all sense objects, tasya prajna pratishtata, for that person's wisdom is firm." Wisdom is firm for one who has completely restrained the senses and mind from all sense objects. And please, we discussed a very important point at least twice before. This restraint is not an act of will. This restraint is a matter of discernment. Remember that discussion? When you recognize that no object or person in the world is a reliable source of contentment, peace, and happiness, and when you recognize, conversely, that the true source of contentment, peace, and happiness lies within, this understanding leads to a complete reversal of orientation, where instead of looking for contentment out in the world, you look for contentment within yourself. That is the discernment. As a result of that discernment, the senses are withdrawn from being dragged about by worldly temptations, as it were. And that concluded, that sort of concludes Sri Krishna's description of the sthita prajna. There are several verses at the end of the chapter now, which give a different kind of description of that enlightened person, and they're quite delightful. You'll see as we continue. Continuing. Yanisha sarva bhutanam, yanisha sarva bhutanam, tasyam jagarti samyami, tasyam jagarti samyami, yasyam jagrati bhutani, yasyam jagrati bhutani, sanisha pashyato munehe, sanisha pashyato munehe. Ya nisha, nisha's night. Ya nisha, that which is night, sarva bhutanam, for all other beings, for all unenlightened people. So that which is night for all unenlightened people, tasyam, in that condition, jagarti samyami. Samyami is one who is controlled, and the prior verse talked about one whose senses are completely restrained, referring to that sthita prajna. So here in this verse, samyami, one who is self-controlled, refers to that sthita prajna, one whose wisdom is firm, one who is enlightened. So that samyami, that enlightened person, jagrati, is awake, tasyam, in that state. So that state for which all, that state which is night, I'm trying to, it's very poetic, so I'll try to get a literal translation of the poetry for you. That which is light, night, that state which is night for all unenlightened beings, in that state an enlightened person is awake. You get the meaning of the words, but what is exactly the meaning? Night here is kind of referring to the dream of ignorance. So it's a metaphor of dream and waking. And the dream, due to the dream of ignorance, unenlightened people think that the true source of happiness is outside in the world. And they live in that delusion. And let me see, that's not, I'm trying, I want to be more in keeping with this poetry. So the contrast, what in let me get finish the verse for you and then try to give it in a more compelling way. So the first half of the verse says that which is night for unenlightened beings, in that state, enlightened beings are awake. And yasyam, in the third line, yasyam jagrati bhutani, in which state all unenlightened beings are awake, sa nisha, that is night, pashyataha munehi, for a wise sage. What is night for unenlightened beings is waking for the enlightened, and what is waking for the enlightened is night for all the others. Let me, to get the sense of it here, night refers to ignorance. So unenlightened people live their lives in this dream of delusion, constantly looking outside for the true source of happiness, which truly lies within. But the enlightened person has awoken from that dream of ignorance. And the enlightened person who is awake to the reality, the enlightened person who's awake to the truth, that Atma, Satchitananda, your true nature, your divine nature, the inner divinity is the actual source of happiness. The enlightened person is awake to that reality, but not unenlightened people. They are asleep, as it were, to that reality. Their eyes are closed to that reality. They can't see that reality. The commentator gives a cute metaphor. He compares a crow and an owl. And the idea is that a crow can see during the day but can't see at night. And owl's eyes apparently are designed so that they see well at night, but perhaps they can't see well during the day. So the owl is attuned to see through the darkness, whereas the crow is not. And the owl then represents the enlightened person, the one who can see through the ignorance, the one who has shaken off, the one who has pierced through that ignorance, the ignorant conception that someplace out there in the world is someone or something that can truly make you happy and continually make you happy. Of course, there is no such thing. That is the ignorance in which unenlightened people live. Unenlightened people live in a dream of ignorance. The enlightened person has woken up from that dream of ignorance. So very poetic. And the next verse is even more poetic. And you notice that it changes meter, change to that longer meter. Most of the verses have 8 syllables per quarter. Here we have that very dramatic, longer meter for this very beautiful poem, poetic image. apuryamanam achala pratishtam, apuryamanam achala pratishtam, samudramapa pravishanti advata, samudramapa pravishanti advata, tadvat kama yam pravishanti sarve, tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve, sashantam apnoti na kama kami, sashantam apnoti na kama kami. Excuse me, my voice sounds a little funny today. This is a favorite metaphor of mine, and you may have heard me use it before, referring to that inner source of peace and contentment is compared to a vast ocean. Let me give you the sense of the example first, and then we'll see the words. So you may have heard me, the expression I like to use is a vast reservoir of peace and contentment lies within you. That vast reservoir is your divine nature. That vast reservoir is your true nature, Satchidananda Atma. And this that expression that I use so often is based on this very verse. It's found also elsewhere in the scriptures, but this is perhaps the most vivid example of it, and where he points out that if you have a vast body of ocean, vast body of water, like an ocean, all the rivers of the world are constantly emptying their waters into that vast body of water, into the ocean, into the sea, but the sea doesn't rise higher. Also, simultaneously, water is evaporating from the surface of all those vast oceans, and the level of the ocean never goes lower. The vastness of the ocean is such that its level never rises and its level never decreases. This is the infinitude. The vastness of the ocean represents the limitlessness of your own ananda, of your own innate fullness and completeness. Let's see the verse and you'll see how... Excuse me. You'll see how Sri Krishna describes it. Starting in the second line, yadvat, just as, and then you'll see in the third line, tadvat, in the same way. So these two words set up the metaphor, the drishtanta, and then in the second half, the darshtanta, that which the metaphor represents. In the third line, yadvat, just as, and back up a few words and find a word apaha. Samudram apaha. Apaha means waters. So yadvat, just as apaha, waters, what do the waters do? Pravishanti, they enter. The water of all the rivers of the world, pravishanti, they enter. Enter what? Sumudram, the sea, the vast ocean. And what kind of ocean is it? It is, in the first line, it is an ocean which is apuryamanam, constantly being filled, apuryamanam, continually being filled by all those rivers, but achala pratishtam, it's pratishtam, it's loosely speaking, its level is achala, unchanging. So all the rivers of the world are emptying into the oceans, and in spite of that amazing amount of water entering the oceans, the level of the ocean doesn't change. Achala pratishtam, apuryamanam, even though the oceans are constantly being filled, achala pratishtam, the level remains unchanged. That's the metaphor. Now, in the third line, tadvat, in the same way, kamaha, desires. And here it means objects of desire. Sarve, at the end of the line, sarve kamaha, all objects of desire, all the things, pardon my the loose language, all the goodies of life, all the pleasures of life. That's a nicer translation. Sarve kamaha, all the pleasures of life, pravishanti, enter yam, a person, an enlightened person. Get the connection. Just as all the rivers of the world enter the ocean, and the level of the ocean remains unchanged, in the same way, yam, for that enlightened person, sarve kamaha, all pleasures enter the enlightened person, but the enlightened person, you have to bring the word down from the first line, bring a word down from line one, achala pratishtam. The enlightened person remains unchanged. When an enlightened person gains some pleasurable experience in the world, in his or her day-to-day life, it says here that the enlightened person remains unchanged. And this takes some understanding. The limited worldly joys enjoyed by every person, including an enlightened person, say the joy of a beautiful morning, the beauty of the joy of a beautiful morning enjoyed by an enlightened person doesn't make the enlightened person more full or complete, because the enlightened person is already infinitely pure, infinitely full, infinitely complete. Do you remember your math class where you were taught an equation? I have to show you this equation. Oops. Oh, this one. I wasn't planning on going to the board, but this is an equation. Equations have to be written on a board. And the equation is infinity plus one equals... Remember that, right? Infinity plus one is still infinity, doesn't change. Infinity plus 1,000,000 is infinity. Infinity plus any number remains infinite. You can't go beyond infinity. You can't, infinite is that number which cannot be transcended, and that infinity represents the fullness or completeness of an enlightened person. Similarly, I won't go back to the board, but if I took infinity minus one, still infinite, infinity minus 1,000,000 is still infinite. So here, now you're getting it. So when an enlightened person enjoys a worldly pleasure, the worldly pleasure cannot possibly add to the innate fullness and completeness of the enlightened person. And when an enlightened person suffers some problem, if an enlightened person has an investment, and the investment is a disaster, and the enlightened person loses millions of dollars, the enlightened person loses nothing. And the metaphor is the ocean, we'll call it the ocean of Ananda, that inner reservoir of peace and contentment, because of its vastness, you can't add anything to it, nor can you detract from it. Which means an enlightened person cannot, through any effort, become more enlightened, become more peaceful, more complete, already fully complete, already perfect at perfect peace. In the same way, any series of difficulties that the enlightened person might meet cannot detract in any way from that inner fullness and completeness. I've often used that metaphor in describing how generally when we help people, you give of yourself and you give and you give and you give. And many people experience kind of running dry over a period of time, running out of love and compassion. It's like for a caregiver, someone who is constantly caring for others, there's such a thing as burnout because there's only a finite amount of physical and emotional energy that caregiver has. Suppose it were an enlightened caregiver. Now, bear in mind, an enlightened caregiver still has the same physical limitations and still has some emotional, normal human emotional limitations, because these are limitations of the body and mind, and those limitations will always be a fact. But the enlightened person is one who has discovered within himself or herself this vast reservoir of peace and contentment. So as a caregiver, that enlightened person would be able to tap in, so to speak, to that infinite inner reservoir. And that's what Sri Krishna is referring to here. So all the waters of all the rivers can flood into the ocean. The ocean doesn't rise. And all the pleasures in the world can be enjoyed by the enlightened person, and the enlightened person will not be enhanced in any way by those pleasures. And even Sri Krishna only gives this half of the idea. The converse is equally true, and that is the waters are evaporating from all the seas in the world, and their level never falls. In the same way, the enlightened person can undergo any number of difficulties, problems, and disasters, and the enlightened person will not be diminished. That inner reservoir of peace and contentment, Satchitananda, your true nature, will not be diminished. That which is your true nature can't change. Unchanging, Atma, consciousness, properly understood, is unchanging. Being unchanging, you can't add to it, and it can't be diminished. And then Sri Krishna concludes, Saha, that person who in a prior line, the person who doesn't change when enjoying all the pleasures of the world, in the final line, Saha, that person, Shantim apnoti. That person apnoti gains shantim. Shanti, peace. That person gains peace. Na kama kami. Not one who is seeking worldly pleasures. Kama, worldly pleasure. Kami, one who seeks. So by seeking worldly pleasures, kama kami, one who seeks worldly pleasures, will that seeking ever be fulfilled? We've had this discussion before. When will worldly seeking culminate in a state of perfect satiation? Temporary satiation, absolutely. You sit down and eat a wonderful meal, you're temporarily satiated, but then you're hungry several hours later. Or you go to the local mall and you buy a lot of goodies at the mall. You are temporarily satiated, but that satiation goes away and you go shopping again the next day. Whatever you accomplish in life will bring you temporary joy and contentment, temporary satiation, never permanent, complete satiation. So that's what he says here. So nakama kami, the one who seeks shanti, peace, through worldly activities will never achieve perfect peace, uninterrupted contentment. That satiation here is called shanti. Who does achieve this shanti is the one who turns within for the sake of contentment and peace. Okay, continuing. Nice verse, by the way, just very nice poetry. Next. Vihaya kamanya sarvan, vihaya kamanya sarvan, pumans charati nispraha, pumans charati nispraha, nirmamo nirahankaraha, nirmamo nirahankaraha, sashantim adhigacchati, sashantim adhigacchati. Ya, in the first line, yaha, one who, vihaya, having given up, kaman, objects of desire, sarvan, all of them. So yaha, that enlightened person, one who, vihaya, having given up, sarvan, kaman, all objects of desires. And remember, as we said before, this giving up is not an act of will. When I think I've given this metaphor previously, when a child gives up a toy, a child that had a stuffed animal toy. You may have had such a toy as a child. Suppose you had a stuffed animal as a toy, and suppose it was your favorite toy. You were so fond of it. You probably don't have that toy today. Probably not. And does it mean at some point in time you decided to give up that toy? You never decided to give it up. Giving up that toy was not a willful act. What we say is you outgrew that toy. And I believe I gave this metaphor before with the bicycle or car example. You outgrew the toy. You discerned. It's a matter of discernment. Prior to discernment, you thought that toy was truly a source of happiness. After you became a little bit more mature, you could discern the truth that that toy is not an actual source of happiness. With that discernment, you outgrew the toy. So here, the gerund used here is vihaya, having given up. But it's more in the sense of having outgrown. You don't give up desires. You outgrow desires. Can I say that again? You don't give up desires. Remember our example of tea. You can give up drinking tea. You can't give up the desire to drink tea. You don't give up desires, but you can outgrow desires. How do you outgrow desires? By discerning that the things you desired are not truly the source of happiness and contentment. That is the discernment. Through that discernment, you outgrow desires. Okay. Vihaya kaman yasarvan. So that in yaha, one who, that enlightened person who outgrows all desires. That in the second line, puman, that person. What about that person? Charati. That person goes on living. That person lives. Nisprahaha. Free from spraha, free from longing, free from attachment. Remember our definition of attachment. Emotional dependence. You can have many things in life, but if you are emotionally dependent on having them, it's a form of bondage. Allow me to give a powerful example. Many of you have raised children. So you love your children, absolutely, but for most parents, there's also attachment to the children, which means emotional dependence to the children. And that emotional dependence is a kind of bondage that means when the children suffer, you suffer. That's bondage. You should be delighting in your in having children, but when your children suffer, you suffer. That is emotional dependence, that is attachment. But here the enlightened person, Puman, that person, Charati, goes on living nisprahaha, without this attachment, without this longing. That enlightened person is nirmama. Mama is the Sanskrit pronoun my. Nirmama is one who is free from myness. Imagine having children without thinking of them as my children. My guru, Pujya Swami Dayananda, would speak to this frequently because he would often be teaching parents of children, and he observed again and again how attached so many of these parents were. And he would be rather bold by saying, your children are not your possessions. Your children are not your possessions. They are independent beings with their own lives, their own karma. They are completely independent. And Pujya Swamiji was fond of using a word to help transform one's relationship. Instead of having children, you are the caretaker of your children. Instead of having a home, instead of owning a home, you are the caretaker of the home. Instead of owning a car, you are the caretaker of that car. Instead of having a possession, you are the caretaker of that possession. And using that word caretaker, Pujya Swamiji was trying to shift everyone's orientation away from that possessiveness and emotional dependence. If you are just the caretaker, you don't have that sense of possession. Mama here means that sense of possession. So nirmamaha, free from a sense of possession. Your children are not your possession, nor is your home. In fact, for many people, the bank owns your home anyway, if you still have a mortgage. But even when your mortgage is paid off, what does it mean to say it's my home? That possessiveness is a problem. If it's my home and it burns down, you have a problem. If it is a home that you are the caretaker to and it burns down, you won't suffer in the same way, being freed from that possessiveness, mama. So nirmamaha, the person is free from possessiveness, nirahankaraha, and free from pride. And I guess pride goes along with possession. My children, my profession, my car. So that pride that comes along with your possession. So that enlightened person who becomes freed, that enlightened person who, I'll paraphrase the first three lines, the enlightened person who outgrows all desires goes on living free from attachment, free from possessiveness, free from pride of ownership. Saha, that person, shantim adhigacchati. That person, adhigacchati, gains shantim, gains peace. It's important here to address a common argument. And starting, referring to the first line, one who gives up all desires, it's a very common argument raised, a good argument, is, wait a minute, doesn't desire drive us to improve ourselves? Desire drives us to improve the world. Desire drives achievement. Does it? What do you really desire? And again, I'd like to go back to my teacher's words here. He gave a unique analysis of desire. Desire is what you is a label. Desire is a label given to an inner sense of incompleteness. I'll say that again. It's an unusual statement. I've never heard anyone else describe desire in this way. He said desire is an expression of an inner sense of incompleteness. When you feel somehow inadequate or incomplete, therefore you desire. And you desire great many things in life because all those things in life can perhaps fulfill that lack that you feel within yourself, that inner sense of completeness. So try this. If a scientist is working to improve mankind, very lofty, a scientist who is working to improve mankind, what would be the motivation of that scientist? Well, and some of you may know that Vasanti, my assistant, is a scientist. She works with other scientists. She works in a laboratory in a major university. And she sees a problem all the time, and that is, scientists are generally not driven to improve the state of mankind. Scientists are driven for purely personal reasons. They want to advance in the academic world. And how do you advance in the academic world? You move up from being an assistant professor to a full professor, and finally a tenured professor. You know, so you get these degrees of advancement. You publish many papers. You become well known. Everyone in your scientific community looks highly upon you. Turns out that the majority of scientists are not driven to improve the state of mankind. They're driven by that inner sense of incompleteness, just like anyone. This is the fundamental driving factor for all people. We had long discussions before of raga dvesha. Raga, we chase after things we think will make us happy and content. Dvesha, we run away from things that will deny us happiness and contentment. Our ordinary lives are driven by raga dvesha, and raga dvesha is an expression of desire. So a scientist who's driven by such desires is not necessarily focused on improving the state of the world. Fortunately, a great number of scientists are driven by a genuine thirst for knowledge. That's wonderful. And a few scientists are genuinely driven by wanting to improve the state of mankind. They're driven by dharma to help others. Is dharma. In fact, those scientists are karma yogis. Those scientists who are driven not to fulfill personal agendas and not even driven by this thirst for knowledge, but those few scientists who are driven by dharma, by a genuine need to improve the status of mankind, in my view, those scientists are truly karma yogis. So the point here is desire is not necessary for achievement. Don't think someone who's desireless doesn't get out of bed in the morning. The one who has outgrown desires does what needs to be done because it's dharma. Ordinary people are driven by raga dvesha. An enlightened person is naturally motivated to follow dharma. It's so simple. Ordinary people, driven by raga dvesha, an enlightened person, freed from raga dvesha, is motivated to follow dharma. Enough said. We've had a lengthy discussion of that quite a while ago. And that brings us to the final verse of chapter 2, where Sri Krishna says, Esha brahmi stiti partha, Esha brahmi stiti partha, Nainam prapya vimuhyati, Nainam prapya vimuhyati, Stitva syamanta kalepi, Stitva syamanta kalepi, Brahma nirvanam ruchati, Brahma nirvanam ruchati. Partha, O Arjuna, son of Prithu. O Arjuna, esha, this stitihi, this state or condition is Brahmi. Brahman is reality. Brahmi stitihi is a state of reality, state of absolute reality, a state of enlightenment. So that word stiti is related to stita prajna, one whose prajna, wisdom, is stita, firm. So that firmness, that stitihi, that firmness of wisdom is brahmi stitihi. It is being established in reality. This is the state of enlightenment. Notice the state of enlightenment is described here not as an state of experience. Sometimes people have this funny notion that enlightenment is a state of being immersed in bliss. Being immersed in bliss is wonderful, and through meditation you can be immersed in bliss. In fact, if you're like me and you like ice cream, eating ice cream can immerse you in bliss. You don't need meditation. Enlightenment is not immersion in a temporary state of bliss. What is it? That's what the whole last part of this chapter about. It is stitihi, it is being established in wisdom, stita prajna. That's what Sri Krishna has been teaching here, verse after verse after verse. Enlightenment is not a temporary state of bliss. Enlightenment is being permanently established in wisdom. Esha brahmi stitihi. Na enam prapya. Enam prapya, having achieved prapya, having gained, enam, you have to break up the words, na enam prapya. Enam prapya, having achieved this stiti, this brahmi stiti, having achieved the state of enlightenment, na vimuhyati. One is never again deluded. One is never again subject to delusion. Once you outgrow that toy, you never again look upon it as a true source of contentment. When you were a child, you loved that toy. Once you outgrow it, you may still have fondness for the toy, but you will never again consider that toy to be an actual source of happiness and contentment. So, enam prapya, having gained this state of being permanently established in wisdom, na vimuhyati, one is never subject again to delusion, to confusion, to ignorance. In the third line, stitva, asyam, antakale api, stitva, having, literally having stayed, You translate it as abiding, stitva, remaining in that condition, abiding in that condition. Notice you cannot abide in a state of bliss. You can enjoy in meditation or eating ice cream, you can enjoy bliss for a period of time. It will eventually go away. Here, stitva, permanently abiding, not in a state of bliss, permanently abiding in this wisdom, in this understanding, the understanding that nothing in the world is necessary for your fullness and completeness, which is an innate truth, an already existent fact of who you are. Stitva, remaining, abiding, asyam, in this state, in this condition. Antakale api, even. Antakale, even at the time of your death. Anta, end, kala, time. The kala, the time of your anta, your end, your death. So abiding in this wisdom at the time of death, brahma nirvanam ricchati. Ricchati, one gains, one achieves, brahma nirvanam. What a profound term. Nirvana, as you've probably heard it described, is a condition of dissolution, merging. It's often explained by when a candle flame gets extinguished. They use that candle flame being extinguished to describe nirvana. There's a common confusion here, though. When the candle flame is extinguished, in ancient times, this is a scientific, in modern times, we know that the flame just ceases to exist. But that metaphor of the candle flame being extinguished is based on a pre-scientific understanding. In order to understand that candle flame metaphor, you have to understand how they used that candle flame metaphor. And in ancient times, they thought that when that flame is extinguished at the candle, that individual flame merges into the universal principle called Agni. Agni, fire, was considered a all-pervasive universal principle. So that little flame merged into the all-pervasive principle called Agni, the little flame merges into the whole. So when nirvana is explained as a candle flame being blown out, it's not describing the end of the existence of the candle flame, but rather it's describing how that individual flame merges into the whole. And here that expression is found, brahma nirvanam ricchati. Nirvanam ricchati, one gains. Nirvanam, dissolution, brahma. Brahma nirvanam, into Brahman, merging into Brahman, becoming utterly non-separate from Brahman. Not a state of non-existence, but rather the part merges into the whole. The individual person loses his or her individuality and becomes utterly non-separate from Brahman, absolute reality. That brings us to the end of chapter 2. And a nice way to conclude our study of chapter 2 would be to return to my English translation. We've seen this a couple of times already. This English translation, you remember, I composed it following the meter of the original Sanskrit. Because it's composed in the meter of the original Sanskrit, we can recite this translation the same way as we recite the Sanskrit verses. It's also somewhat condensed, so it's not very long. And it's a really wonderful way to get the get a summary of the chapter, to get the so-called bird's eye view, an overview of the chapter. And so we'll conclude our study today reciting this. I think maybe the first two verses you can listen and repeat, and then you'll be able to follow. So starting with the third verse, we'll recite together. First two verses, listen and repeat, just to remember how we do this. So verse 2 began. Sanjaya said, then Lord Krishna did thus address, Arjuna sunk in deep despair, with eyes downcast and full of tears, overcome by his tenderness. The Blessed Lord said, O Arjuna, how can you be? O Arjuna, how can you be disheartened at this crucial time? Your impious and shameful mood will bring you down in great disgrace. We can chant together now. Do the best you can. Join me. Yield not to this unmanliness, for it befits you not. I'm sorry, it was said together. I forgot already. Together. Yield not to this unmanliness, for it befits you not at all. Cast off this mean faint-heartedness. Arise and fight, O Arjuna. Arjuna said, O Krishna, how can I oppose Bhishma and Drona in this war? How can I pierce with arrow sharp those worthy of my reverence? Rather than slaying such great men, better to live a life of alms, since by killing them I would gain their wealth and treasure stained with blood. By weakness I am overcome. As to dharma I am confused. Tell me for certain what is best. I am your student, teach me please. Sanjaya said, after saying, I shall not fight. Silently Arjuna did sit. Then Lord Krishna began to speak, with a slight smile upon his lips. The Blessed Lord said, you mourn those who need not be mourned, yet you speak words of wisdom too. The truly wise mourn not for those who are dead and those yet to die. Never have I existed not, nor have you, nor these kings of men, nor shall we ever cease to be. In the future, in later lives, the one who in this body dwells, through childhood, youth, and in old age, will then another body gain. In this the wise are not confused. These bodies destined to expire all possess an eternal soul, indestructible beyond thought. Therefore go fight, O Arjuna. Neither born nor subject to death, the soul will never cease to be eternal and immutable, living on when the body dies. Just as one casts away worn clothes, dressing again in new attire. So too, when old bodies expire, a soul acquires others new. Not by weapons can it be pierced, nor by fire can it be burned. Not by waters can it be wet, nor by winds can it withered be. Unmanifest beyond all thought, unchanging, thus our souls described. Therefore, knowing this to be so, you have no reason now to mourn. Death is certain for all those born. Birth is certain for all who die. Since this is inevitable, you have no reason now to mourn. Also, with your dharma in view, you should remain unwavering, because for warriors nothing is worthier than a righteous war. But if you now refuse to fight in this battle most virtuous, you will forfeit dharma and fame by committing this grievous sin. Great warriors will despise your name, thinking you yielded due to fear. Your enemies with vicious words will degrade you a dreadful shame. If you die, heaven you will gain. If you win, the kingdom is yours. Therefore stand up, O Arjuna, and be resolved to fight the war. Excuse me. Now Sri Krishna introduces the topic of Karma Yoga. Thus far of wisdom I have spoke, of Karma Yoga listen now, practicing which you shall be freed from the bondage of all your deeds. Those who seek but pleasure and power, attached to Vedic rituals, obsessed with heavenly rewards, their hearts will never be at peace. Like a pond in a mighty flood, water surrounding everywhere, such is the worth of Vedic rites for one who knows the highest truth. Actions alone you can control, but their results you cannot choose. Be not the author of the fruits, yet to inaction be not drawn. Give up attachment to results, act instead with this attitude. Treat success and failure alike. Yoga is equanimity. Lowly are those who think themselves to be the authors of the fruits. Arjuna, you should seek support in Karma Yoga's principles. By this yoga, the wise renounce attachment to their works' results. Freed from the bondage of rebirth, they reach the state beyond all grief. Bringing us to the final topic, Stitta Prajna, the one whose wisdom is firm, introduced, as I said, by Arjuna's question. Arjuna said, O Krishna, please describe to me the nature of enlightened ones. How do the steady-minded speak? How do they sit and move about? The Blessed Lord said, O Arjuna, when they forsake all cravings born of their own minds, content in themselves with the self, such are they whose wisdom is firm. With minds untroubled by distress, free from thirst for the world's delights, having no cravings, fear, or rage. Such are they whose wisdom is firm, rejoicing not in pleasant times, nor detesting adversity, free from every attachment here. Such are they whose wisdom is firm, as a tortoise withdraws its limbs. All their senses are drawn away from the objects that they perceive. Such are they whose wisdom is firm, even for those of wisdom vast, who strive to practice self-control. Their minds can be carried away by the senses so turbulent, dwelling on objects in the world. To them attachment does arise. From attachment desire stems forth. From desiring does anger spring. From such anger delusion comes. In delusion values are lost. Then reasoning gets overwhelmed. Finally the person is lost. But those remaining self-controlled, even when senses clamor strong, free from cravings, despising not, they attain great tranquility. Just as wind carries boats astray, senses can lead wisdom away. Therefore those whose wisdom is firm restrain their senses constantly. With this verse, this condensed English translation comes to an end. You can find this text on our website. You'll find a link in the description below. You'll also find all the English verses recited in a separate video on my YouTube channel. Take a look at that if you're interested. So, nice to get this overview of Chapter 2. In our next class, we'll begin Chapter 3, Karma Yoga. We'll conclude with a prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhagbhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat.